Hi everyone. Today, Caitlin and I are going to discuss Recipe for Love by Aurora Ray. Hannah Little doesn't have much use for fancy chefs or fancy restaurants, but that's exactly what Three Willows Farm needs to survive. When a local restaurant wants to feature her produce, she's thrilled. But the contract means working with an egotistical and, let's face it, drop-dead gorgeous head chef from New York City. Chef Drew Davis can't wait to run her own kitchen. If taking a job at some trendy farm-to-table restaurant in the middle of nowhere will get her there faster, she's on board. She has no intention of staying, though, and that means the feisty farmer who keeps trying to tell her how to do her job can't be anything more than a pleasant distraction.
Hey, Rebecca.
Hi, Caitlin.
How are you?
I think a little bit more awake than you are. How are you?
I am sleepy, which is kind of amazing considering I didn't move from my couch very much today, but you know, we're getting through it and that's all we can hope for, I guess.
How did you say it? We'll get through this as long as we'll get to see each other as long as we don't see each other.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we're just doing our best. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. I have nothing exciting to tell you based on the things I usually do.
Yeah,
I do have an update for you, but please continue.
Okay, I'm excited. I re-downloaded like gaming apps on my phone, which I haven't had in years. So I have Words with Friends and crossword puzzles and scavenger hunts and this game called Hue, where you like match color puzzles, and anytime I feel myself getting some kind of way, I just like do a puzzle on my phone. My eyes hate me.
Are they harder since you had LASIK?
Or
easier?
It's easier. I just get really tired. Like my eyes get really tired very easily. And then I can't focus. Like literally, then I can't focus my eyes. So then it's just a whole ball of wax.
Could it work like a melatonin thing where you just do it at night and then you go to bed?
Oh, I wish.
Oh, okay. I tried. This is why I'm not a paid professional, y'all.
What have you been up to? What's your update?
Oh, it's not mine.
Okay.
But, you know, I live with somebody. I'm happily married. And your discussions of Sims have trickled their way into this particular dwelling. But instead of creating other people and imaginary whatever, my spouse took it upon herself to create a Sim house that is comprised of Sims that have our likeness and our personality traits.
Oh, wow.
So not only are we inside for COVID, she made the choice to trap us inside of Sims for COVID, but she's letting them do all the things we can't actually do in the real world. So,
oh,
yeah, some days I'm sad and some days I'm really worried.
I mean, I told your spouse this already, but I'll just pass this along as additional messaging. If you download The Sims for Seasons, they have bees.
She just told me, she's like, you can have an apiary if we get another expansion. I was like, what? You know, it's not my call, it's your call. But I'm glad that my virtual Sim could possibly have an apiary. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what my dad has been doing a lot with this COVID situation. He's been driving out to where he keeps his bees because it's on, like, alone on a farm. And he visits his girls, as he calls them. And, like, God, doesn't that sound nice?
One summer, I'm going to find a way to do whatever the, like, apiary equivalent of apprenticing is with your dad. Just 1 year. I'm going to
be so happy.
Oh, my goodness. So,
well, despite how, I don't even know, lackluster our life updates are right now, we are excited about the book that we're going to be discussing today.
Yes, we were supposed to talk about this book the day before I went into quarantine, and I think like 3 days before you did, in person over a decadent meal and well-mixed cocktails at one of our favorite places in the District of Columbia. And we decided to table it and we said we'd do it later. And the need to talk about this just outweighed getting to that meal. And initially it wasn't our plan to record about this particular Ray book. That wasn't what we were going to focus on. I don't know, have all these feelings about it.
I love it. I'm so excited. This is one of those slow burner kind of books that as I was reading it, I just found myself falling more and more in love with the characters in a way that feels so true to life. Like you're getting to know them, like they're your friends, and you're learning facets of their personality as the characters are learning about each other. And it was just such a good reread.
Yes, I reread it as well, and I just felt better. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know, like weight was lifted. It's just an enjoyable experience to read a Ray book. It was exactly what I needed this week, and I had no idea.
Makes me want to just run somewhere and go have a farm.
Well, so I did want to share with you, one of the best surprises to come out of doing this with you is the community that we've found with other people talking about books. Because we don't just get to talk to each other. We have this wonderful tribe of fellow readers who reach out to us and allow us to reach out to them. And we communicate various things. And you run the Instagram account, and yesterday you made the announcement that we were going to be discussing A Recipe for Love by Aurora Ray. And Brenna reached out to me. She went and picked up the book and started reading it like immediately. And all I know is I received a message like a couple hours after you did the initial post that read, "I'm three chapters in and I'm going to end up planting all of my tomatoes too early and grilling a whole damn chicken." And I was just like, well, if anything sums up like the immediate desires that come out in the first couple chapters of reading this book, I think wanting to plant too early when many of us are still experiencing way too cold of temperatures and cook something decadent is definitely in there. So
yes. How shall we begin? How shall we kick off our discussion of this book?
So we say frequently we don't want to go plot point by plot point, but I think it works really well with this particular book to open with the opening scene, which is Drew being interviewed for this new position as a chef.
Yes. She's being interviewed for Fig Restaurant as the head chef of this restaurant that is being reopened with a new brand identity and with a new concept of being a true farm-to-table restaurant. Drew is, in the words of many of the other characters, a hotshot New York City chef who has made the move upstate to work at this restaurant. And she sees this as she's interviewing and looking around and considering whether to move to this small town. She is considering this as a great next step, sort of a way to jump through fewer hoops than she would have to in New York City in order to have her own restaurant, run her own kitchen, and just like be totally killing the food world. So when she interviews at the restaurant with the owner, Nick, he says, "Okay, I want you to cook me something, but better yet, I want you to go to two of our suppliers and pick up whatever ingredients you want and come back here and cook me something." And that's how our journey begins.
Yeah, we get the meet cute, like with meal preparation instead of a random meeting at a restaurant. And there's nothing wrong with like random meetings at a restaurant, but I don't know. The person to me who likes to dissect things really likes that this is, you know, a deconstructed meal from the beginning, and then it parses together for this elaborate, like, feast towards the end. I like that it starts with ingredients and then works its way up. So as these two develop a relationship, it's actually things mixing together and spice being added, all puns intended. Yeah. So
one of the suppliers that Drew is sent to get ingredients from is Hannah Little at Three Willows Farm. Mm-hmm. And we should say that the book starts off at the end of spring. It's still cool. It's still kind of...
I mean, you definitely can't plant in the ground unless you're doing, like, hardier things right now. This is something I'm having to learn that's new to me. And I know it's a little bit warmer in Connecticut right now than it is around the Finger Lakes area and Ithaca and that area. But my parents already have most of their stuff planted and a lot of stuff producing in Louisiana. And here, that's just, yeah, I cannot. I've been told by many people that I have to be patient and wait until around Mother's Day before I plant anything. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, and so when Drew pulls up, it's rainy, it's mushy, and she sort of is saying, well, you know, I'm excited to get to source fresh ingredients. That's the how I like to cook. But there's not going to be a ton for me to work with because I'll, you know, hopefully they have some root vegetables, but they're going to be pretty cleared out.
And yeah, Hannah's like pointing out what she's been going through. She's like, well, I'll have a little bit of arugula. Mm-hmm. You have to wait for a while on tomatoes. You know, the squash is going in the ground soon. And mm-hmm. she's with the trowel, like cutting into plastic and getting seeds into the
earth. I love this first interaction because you have Drew coming in, giving the appearance. We learn later that she isn't truly this way, but she's dressed up for a job interview. And she's stepped in a puddle and she's kind of, you know, she's nervous and anxious and she really comes off to Hannah not very great. She makes a snide comment about, well, you know, I bet there's not a ton for me to choose from. And Hannah is pretty turned off by that and is excited for her friend Nick, who is the restaurant owner, to hire a chef and to be doing this venture. But she isn't sure that Drew is the right fit. She thinks that based on this interaction that Drew is going to be a tweezer chef, which was my favorite description.
Which means you serve meals with tweezers and foam. And mm-hmm. we all have an idea of what that looks like in our head. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, but I've had a few experiences eating some of that food, but I worked in restaurants for 10 years, so most of the time it was behind the line, but like chefs feeding me stuff, but uh-huh. yeah, it has its place, but very hard to do in a town that's, you know, promoting its local source materials. So mm-hmm. the one thing that I've constantly learned over and over as we read these books, against what I've been told most of my life as a woman, is that first impressions are usually absolutely not true to form with how you feel about people. You know, Hannah is very protective, and I think that goes into a stranger entering a new space narrative. She has this idea of what it should be. And Drew's been, you know, paying penance for a long time, been working the lines, went through culinary school, is trying to get her established self and resume and get ready to do the things she wants to do. And in order to do that, it means leaving the bustling city that is New York and going upstate to have the opportunity where she's not competing with as many people to be a mm-hmm. chef. She does get some ingredients. She goes back and she feeds Nick this pork chop amazing dish that just makes your mouth water as you're reading, like how they describe this food. And he completely engulfs, like he just takes all of it in. He's like, well, it's the first meal of my day, but also it's delicious. When can you start? Let's discuss yep. salary. And then we're off to the races. Like, that's it. The next few moments, we're back into the book. Drew's finding a rental. She's eating at the local bowling alley and getting a burger with Brussels sprouts, and randomly sees Hannah with like a couple of friends in the distance in her frilly, I think she's wearing a peasant top, but then mm-hmm. these really modern bowling shoes. And, you know, we start to get that, oh shit, I recognize somebody, but I'm also staring at them for reasons besides they're familiar. And yeah, these two are super yeah. cute.
They're super cute. There's a lot of their first interactions consist of a lot of one of them staring at the other and getting caught, which I just love. And it worked so well because they're working together. Hannah's farm is a major supplier for the restaurant. Drew is coming to the farm and has a say in what vegetables she's getting, and also is really building her menu around what's locally available and what's in season. So they have a really symbiotic relationship as business people. And yet there are these lingering glances, and they keep catching the other doing it. And it's just a really great, subtle way to build the tension of their relationship without it feeling like an overdrawn will they or won't they.
Yeah, and the food becomes the flirting device.
Yes.
Like, and I mean it from, honestly, from like conception to finish. It is a way to intimately get to know each other without overstepping that boundary of consent immediately. And it also, getting through this book without constantly going to the refrigerator and having that conversation of, do I want a snack or do I put this down and cook myself something as wonderfully savory as something described in this text. There was a lot of read it straight through.
So. Yeah. I just want to go ahead and say, I think we're going to say this a lot through this episode. I love how Aurora Ray writes about food. I love that. And I think you've even said this to her on Twitter. I love how all of her books, her characters care so much about food. They're always cooking. They're always eating. And that's kind of rare in books that are focused on women and focusing on women's bodies.
There's never a discussion about, oh, I indulged. I guess I have to spend an extra hour at the gym tomorrow. Or, oh, I really want that, but I indulged 3 years ago, so I better not indulge now. And it's not to say other people do it. I actually find in WLW/lesfic novels that happens less.
Yes.
There are fewer instances of food as a negative force. And I'm so here for it, and I'm here for people who are in food industries being food positive.
Yeah,
because you don't open a farm to table restaurant without appreciating the things that go into it, but also not everything is like over the top super crazy measuring the oil down to the absolute drop. You know, when Drew's hungry and goes into town and ends up in this bowling alley, she sits down to a burger and Brussels sprouts. And I don't think the Brussels sprouts are there to be like, ooh, she's eating a vegetable. I'm thinking charred Brussels sprouts with a hamburger are fucking delicious.
So, yeah.
Put a little bit of pomegranate, some balsamic on that, I'm there. You know, I'm here for it. So there's a scene where they're flirting at one point. In the kitchen, Drew's in her element. People are shouting, yes, chef, behind. And, like, what an awesome, like, kind of way to flirt with somebody when other people around you are taking your instructions. And I don't know. That whole thing on a power dynamic is just sexy cute. But she packs Hannah a meal to take back. And she's like, here, you know, I'm going to send you with food. And she mentions, you know, we're making these shortcakes with fresh berries. But the berries aren't from Hannah's farm. Hers aren't ready to be harvested yet. And she asks Hannah if she wants one, and Hannah mentions it. Well, actually, I'd like two, but I'm not going to ask. And there's a wonderful, beautiful Aurora Ray writing, and I should have highlighted it. But she's like, I'm not upset or embarrassed or unwilling to have two desserts.
Yeah, Hannah says, I'm not embarrassed to eat two, but I'm a little embarrassed to ask for two.
There we go. How can we just unpack all of that in your head for all of the 5 seconds it takes to read it? And what a magnificent amount of permission Aurora Ray gives her characters as a writer to just enjoy things.
Yeah, and, I love it. I love... It's not, the food is not, and descriptions of food and the use of food as a means of expression and a means of building relationships, it's not just between Drew and Hannah. It's also between Hannah and her friends and Drew and her family when they come to visit. And it's how she proves herself to the strangers of the town. And it's how Hannah forms a relationship with her little sister. Like, it's just such an expansive web, and it's so wholesome isn't the right word, but I think there's something really like communal. Beautiful about it and communal and I love
nourishing.
It
like besides nourishing just the body for nutrients, it is nourishing of the interaction and community that food creates.
Yeah.
I And but Ray blows a lot of stuff up. So she takes food and she makes it this wonderful thing. And I'm here for it. So when I was taking notes for this episode, I was thinking about this today. And outside of maybe Claire Lydon, who we've talked about, this is the only text I can name where it's not like a grandiose thing attached to it. And I almost thought A Walk in Winter, but no, one of the characters has quite a bit of money, right? So right. These are two people who have both their affluence isn't a superpower in this, fame isn't a superpower in this, mistaken identity isn't a superpower. These are two people that you and I could easily meet, mm-hmm. walk by, or interact with any day.
Yes.
And the stakes for me while reading this, especially during this situation that we're all currently sharing together as a world, just was almost comforting because there was nothing outside of the realm of believable for me. And I do like that escapism, but it made this flirtation and this relationship so much more heightened for me. And
No, I 100% agree. I actually made that same note. I used the word mundane, which I don't think is the right word because there's a connotation to that that is negative and I don't like, but there's something about this story and these characters and the journey of their relationship that you can step into and you can imagine, you can place real people into it. It feels very attainable. It feels very real. And you're right, like affluence or some of the crazy world building that we've seen isn't present here. Like nobody's a 25-year-old
pop star.
Yeah, nobody's a, there's no pop stars. There's, you know, it's just two mature women who are dealing with their own ambition and their own visions of what they see for their lives.
Yeah. And
dealing with very real issues that I think a lot of us actually have to go through and figure out at a certain age and in certain relationships.
Right. And that's not to knock any of the other books we've read. We've enjoyed them. We find strengths in them. But I realize when I read novels where people are not horribly suffering or in these larger than most people will experience in their life situations, how unfrequently I see queer representation with two people both there. There's always a plus on top of it. So if they're queer, it's always queer plus this, and it's always one extra level. So it's almost unattainable if you're looking for yourself in representation, because if you're not that, then you have to find somebody who is, and there aren't many of those people. There just aren't, you know, and your random location of meeting them, while lovely to think about it, I have a huge spot. I love that these women are out in their life with everybody, and the fact that they're queer is like a small hum in the background. We get with Hannah's family, there's a little bit back there, and they use her farm, and is this a lucrative job choice and things and other things. So there's some judgment from Hannah's family elsewhere on her. And then with Drew, you have this really amazing supportive family of women behind her, with her mom and her grandmother. And also, like, the character, it's a biracial relationship, which is fucking amazing. Like, thank you.
And there's some really frank discussions about their different worldviews because of their upbringing, because of their different racial backgrounds, that I think is very real and lends good nuance to the two different characters. Like, the things that Drew thought about when she was moving into this small town is very real and very different from how Hannah, as a white woman, like, views her relationship with the town that they find themselves in.
Drew says, well, I didn't meet that many people. No, I didn't see very many people who look like me. But also, there's a college town close by, and college towns often express, like, a more varied, you know, collection of people who are around those campuses. So, and this is very real conversations. We've heard and been privy to people in our life who have these conversations with us and make sure that we check our privilege regularly. And then I know you and I've had conversations when we travel, depending on which side of the Mason-Dixon line we flip-flop on, about how small of a town do we get towards, you know, if, and things like that. So it just, all of it just felt, I nothing in this inherently felt far away. Like the technology that's used, it could have been 10 years ago, it can be today. It just mm-hmm. works for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels very contemporary. A lot of these books are like, we turn classed as like contemporary, but this feels very like of the moment. And it did that without dropping like a ton of pop culture or some of the other markers that you could use to place yourself in a distinct time. So I just loved that. It was so refreshing to read a book like this.
And for me personally, Aurora Ray was in the early part of us starting this journey together when we were really just consuming so much, like back to back every day uh-huh. we went through a book or two. And I was working my way through, you know, recommended for you or top authors and people with a decent catalog to catch up on. Aurora Ray's books were the first time I was able to really project myself into somebody who wasn't a Radcliffe character. Mm. And I really appreciate, and I don't necessarily want to call it a butch femme dynamic that exists in her novels, but it's more just not two incredibly feminine women who there's not a single care in the world and everybody, like being queer is a thing in her book. And I love the younger sister using the word queer and saying she looks super good. Oh, so, okay. When Hannah is talking to Claire, that's her sister's name?
Yeah, her little sister, Claire.
And Claire's 12 years her junior. I love how I can remember the age gap, but I trip over the names. And Claire's like, oh, I heard she's super hot and super queer. And it's like, of course, that's what a teenager would say. Not lesbian, not gay, but queer. Like, that's just, she's trying to suss out if she may be queer. And she's like, well, you can't assume with how people look and you can't do this. And finally she says, and you know, she's going back and forth and she says something and Hannah says to Claire, that's stereotypical, don't do that. And she's like, well, you're saying that because people don't recognize you as being queer. You're femme presenting, you get erased all the time. And I want to come back and talk to you about this because we're going to get there. But they keep sussing through everything. And finally, she has an HRC sticker on the back of her car. She's like, okay, well, fine, you know, and whatever. So, cycling back for a minute. Mm-hmm. Ray does something I haven't encountered in the books I've talked to you about very much, which is when a femme-presenting character talks about the erasure that happens within the queer community of presenting as femme. So, often when we hear about queer people in the real world or queer people in text having a harder time, it's because, and I'm going to focus on people who most likely use she and her. So I'm not to erase anybody, but let's focus there. We often have butch, tomboy, center people get erased because that's not feminine enough. And that's what becomes a plot point. Aurora Ray takes the, hey, I'm femme. I feel powerful being femme. I feel beautiful being femme. I'm also queer. I am also this, or whatever the character's trajectory is. But I get erased within my own community because I'm not immediately seen as being queer. And then because I'm not seen as being queer by the straight community either, I get a different form of erasure. This is not my narrative, nor has it ever been. Did this stick out to you at all?
Well, it stuck out to me, maybe not for the reason that you're thinking of, because there's something interesting, just as an aside, there's something interesting to read so many contemporary romance novels, because I do find myself as like a femme-presenting woman so often in these books. What I find, and I'm going to try really hard to articulate this, so tell me if this doesn't make sense, but especially in this book and in a few of Ray's other books, when this conversation about femme erasure in queer communities comes up, I find it so gratifying because by doing so, Rey is taking her characters and building a world around them in which there is actual queer community. So it's not just a friend group that all happens to be lesbians and runs into assorted other queer women in their cities. The conversations that Rey's characters have are as people who are part of a larger queer lexicon. They're tied into queer history of their towns, of their communities. And it feels very, it feels so real to my own lived experience as a queer woman in cities with different types of communities. And I appreciate that because my one complaint about some other romance novels can be that you have this beautiful utopic landscape where, you know, these queer women can engage in relationships and be out and happy, but they exist almost in a vacuum where the realities of what it means to not be straight have no impact. I don't know, like, if these characters go to New York, I believe that they would go to Henrietta Hudson's and then, like, pop over to the Stonewall. Like, I believe that they exist in a world that has the same markers of queer identity as your world and my world, which completely is another reason why I think I like Rey as an author so much.
Yeah, and their best friends work for me, too. And I'm worried I'm going to say this in a way that sounds like a bad stereotype, and that's not my intention. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we learn with Drew and Baker that they've just been bros forever. That's just their relationship. And I really appreciated using the term bro. Mm-hmm. This shouldn't be really a big deal, but, like, I have those people in my life. And as a person who, you know, when I go to the dinner party with my femme-presenting spouse, the guys are like, well, you're going to come with us and watch sports, even though, ironically, she knows much more about basketball than I ever will. So, you know, there are these institutions put in place, but I definitely have, like, my queer big sisters who kind of, you know, got my back when I was too awkward to be allowed to function alone. And we use language like that, but it's mm-hmm. in no way dismissive of anything to identify ourselves as also female. Mm-hmm. And then you have Hannah and her best friend who tried to date. It went horribly on the second date, like, as they described, the most awkward sexual experience probably of both of their lives, definitely of Hannah's. And they're still friends and they can't have it on the other side, and they pick on each other and they just have this really wonderful friendship. And I think within the queer community, there's something very unique about becoming friends with, or very, very best friends with, somebody you were once intimate with. Mm-hmm. And also then being in the same dating arena and friend arena, it's just true to life. It's just true to my lived experience. And I don't realize that I never see it on screen, on page, in audio until I encounter it. And I'm like, oh my God, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so, we get giddy talking about these things because I'm like, oh my God, that was so great. Or can we talk about how amazing that structure of the narrative was, or this or that? And really, it's just me being, oh my goodness, there's representation of the people I've met in my life. And occasionally there's representation of who I am. And I am desperate for it all the time because Hollywood butch is, you know, mm-hmm. How did Cameron Esposito describe it? Is Anne Hathaway in a baseball cap? You know, it just doesn't exist. It's just not there. Other things that I really appreciated in the text, Hannah likes to present, you know, she likes to put on dresses. She likes to put on makeup. She likes to feel very feminine. And I've already expressed that to you. And I'm, you know, married to somebody who sometimes that's the power she feels when she presents in life. But then Drew has a moment where she comments on just how stunning Hannah is and how much she loves a woman in a dress. And it's this odd thing that you get to do in the queer community where it's not objectification, even though it's kind of a little bit of objectification. And I'm just here for it. I'm just like, because everybody wants to think the person across from them, like, finds them sexy. Mm-hmm. And just so well done. Like, the flirting's so good. It's so good.
I know, the flirting is so good in this book. It's like, I love when they are together. Like, I love their intimate moments. I love the journey of their relationship. But the buildup to them getting together is so fun. And, like, there is a little bit of will they or won't they, because, you know, they go on a cute little picnic date and Hannah says, this is a bad idea. We shouldn't do this. Like, we should be professional. And Drew.
But Drew's also suave as hell because no plasticware, full dishware.
Yeah.
game. So much
game.
Yeah,
I mean, Drew is charming and is, like, kind of pulling out the stops to be impressive and backs off. They still flirt and she... So then there's a fun interlude of the book where they're flirting and Hannah said no. She said she doesn't want this, but she can't stop thinking about Drew and she's excited to see her every time she shows up at the farm. And
but she, Drew also respects that immediately. Like, consent is... Oh, and consent is manipulated and done so well, too.
Yeah, I mean, Ray... When they finally do get together, Ray writes a good sex scene.
Do you follow Aurora Ray on Instagram?
Not on Instagram.
Okay, so again, we live in a new normal, but Ray has posted in the past of like screenshots that do not give us any indication of the wonderful books I'm sure that are coming, of being in public spaces when she writes her sex scenes, like bars or coffee shops.
Oh my gosh.
There's something delightfully wonderful about that.
Yeah. They're really good. I like the frank conversations that her characters have about consent and about boundaries before and during their intimate moments. Like,
Drew says, tell me what you want. And Hannah says, I'm not fragile. You don't have to be gentle with me, which is the most effective, quickest, and hottest way of talking about power play that mm-hmm. I've read in a not heightened state stakes, like other level novel before.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. Also... I'm cautious to bring this up, not because I don't want to talk to you about it. We've established we'll talk about, go back and listen to the Fiona Riley episode.
Are we about to talk about the strap-on scene?
Not necessarily. This is what I want to say. I'm cautious to talk about how that play works in this book, because if people have not read this book and have not seen consensual strap play or penetration play, I almost don't want to get too involved in it because, one, I don't want to keep anybody from feeling like they have the understanding of how well this is written by hearing us talk about it. I think it is a fantastic version of fiction of how to show consensual,
mm-hmm.
that type of consensual experience between two consenting adults. And also just both attraction and just being turned on, but also the communication to get there.
Yes. And because that's like an awkward... sometimes weird conversation to have, just like
it
to
was
interrupt
so...
to interrupt a makeout and be like, this is what I want, are you okay with this, do you have this, like, and
it's not even that, they were having dinner and it comes up, which baller move on Hannah, good for Hannah. And then also when there's discussion of how it's going to continue, the power move of how, when you have permission to use your own body, when you're both consenting to power play, and how it goes from there, and then, like, the after talk, when you're both in a vulnerable situation. I really want to talk about it, but the other part of me feels kind of conflicted about it, because I honestly believe it is so well handled that I don't want to prevent somebody from having that first-time experience with the dialogue.
Yeah. It's just good, guys. Just go read it.
Do you want to talk about it more in depth?
No, I just think... I appreciate the fact that this is such a recurring theme in Ray's books. Like,
mm-hmm.
there's something to be said for reading many things by the same author. So when I got into reading Aurora Ray's stuff, I read like all of it in one go. And it's interesting to do so because you can pick up sort of the themes and the ideas that they like to revisit. And this is such, you know, the theme of consent and frank discussions of power within intimacy and the way that that morphs and changes is so important. And I don't think it's in enough fiction that's like these types of stories. And I just really appreciate that Ray puts this right in front of us and says, this is an important thing in these relationships, and it's not like a boner killer, you know, it doesn't end the sexy time for anybody. If anything, it makes it more intimate and more a time for the two characters to come together.
So one of the only times I get kicked out when I read stuff like this is when people talk about an actual strap versus other devices or outerwear that has been developed by various companies over time that you can wear outside of a bunch of hooks and loops and belts and things like that. So
that doesn't kick me out only because I feel like the old school leather harness is trying to make a comeback. Like I've seen some ads and some like photo shoots of like the new and improved leather harness that's like baby pink or, you know,
XYZ. Y'all, if you can rock it. Like, I think it takes a certain amount of natural suaveness to do that. And obviously Drew has it. So, yes. You know, and then
Drew has it.
Hannah has it too. And good on them. Yeah, Ray avoids having to do the, will they call it underwear or will they call it panty scene. Hannah just doesn't wear anything undergarment wise when it's too hot. And again, another thing that like you don't realize how often you don't see it until you start to read it. Aurora Ray often lets one of her characters wear sports bras or wear boxer briefs or any other option besides lace bralettes and things like that. And it shouldn't really matter, but it's nice to occasionally see those representations. So, you know, I'm here for it. As I said, when we started doing this particular episode, you know, it feels like a deconstructed meal being comprised together and cooked for this final course. And, you know, we eventually get to the moment where it feels real life, you know, they've traveled and Drew has this opportunity to follow her dream job and not necessarily have to do it in a town as small as this one and far away from her family. And, you know, what do you do in moments like that? What do you do when you have job opportunities and life opportunities and then you've also met this person? And I think a lot of people go through that, and that is a big enough hurdle that you don't need, you know, these out of the world situations to come into play. So.
Yeah. And on the flip side, Hannah is dealing with the very real intricacies of owning and running a business and the exhaustion that comes from that. And sometimes businesses don't work. Like sometimes something comes up that's just out of your control and it can change the course of your life, or it can derail something that you've worked really hard for as long as you've been working. So I agree. It felt like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I ached when I read the sort of the middle part where they're figuring these things out, and you know, the melodramatic moments of leaving each other to pursue their separate dreams. Which is a cap, like, okay, like I'm a Capricorn. I am someone, I have like a 20-step plan for my life. I have goals, and I don't know that I wouldn't do what Drew does and like first, you know,
Drew if doesn't I was throw me out in and
situation. Yeah,
I don't know
no.
if that has anything to do with my zodiac sign. I get it. Like, I mean, what do you do? You know, and that's unfair to your relationship too, because you end up in these situations where even if you don't feel that way, the person you're with can project that you were constantly thinking about what your life would be like had you made the other choice. And it's loaded for both of you the second you engage in anything like that.
I thought it was really realistic because they do have an undeniable connection. They have undeniable chemistry. They feel, you know, all of the things that you like to see in a romance novel. But on a surface level, they're a brand new relationship. They are still getting to know each other and are still learning about each other. And it does really come down to this shiny, scary new relationship versus the idea that you've built up in your head about what your life is supposed to look like. I mean, that can be the most terrifying thing to let go of. And which I think is so real and something that everyone grapples with, whether or not you are in a leaving a relationship behind or not, you know.
And a lot said, like, the writing is so solid because we learn that Drew does not question her family's, her familial, you know, love for her and support of her, even when she's further away from them. You know, her best friend is ride or die for her, even if they're not seeing each other every day. And then we have Hannah, who is very protective of Nick. He's basically chosen family for her. And she has a strained relationship with members of her own family and always kind of worries that that family might kind of push people she cares about back out. And, you know, there's these, the tiniest of minutia that weighs on you without it being, you know, I was completely cheated on and she stole my cat and then she blew up my car and she got together with my ex. Like, there's none of that insanity to lead to Hannah being cautious. It's just a bunch of life events over and over again that have kind of put this, almost this patina on her that she's very cautious with. And yeah. Drew has her own caution, but I would make the argument her caution is with, she's so solid in family and everything else that she's cautious with the choices she just makes to get where she wants to go. Like, where the energy can be focused, because we only have so much of it. It's so well done. And the second time reading it, I picked up on plenty of stuff I missed the first. And we're not even talking about the kid sister in that narrative.
I mean, this story is so rich. There's so much that we're not talking about, we're not able to talk about because people don't want to listen to us go on for 3 hours. But there's such a deep community and world that Ray builds here, and it's intergenerational. It's you know, different types of queer identities, different understandings of what it means to be queer. And there's so much good food. Like,
so much good food. Oh my God.
We could take an hour.
Say it again.
I said we could take an hour and just go through the descriptions of this great food that Ray puts together.
She mentions putting pecans on spaghetti squash. As a person who grew up in the South, I've never done that, but that's going to change. So, yeah, I bet that sweetness pair as well. I almost wish, you know, in some food books, you kind of get recipes before or after. Almost it's like, so Rory, drop one of your recipes, you know?
Yeah, the only thing that I wanted more of from this book, and I don't think this was this type of book, so this is just me being petty. We get a lot of Drew thinking about the ingredients, and we get a lot of descriptions of the final dishes. But for me, what I would have loved more hints of was the craziness of the kitchen. I think there could have been something really interesting done of just the sheer like hustle and bustle of like getting all your mise en place together and dealing with firing the plates and, you know, I think that would have been a really interesting contrast to Hannah's farm life, which is also very hard and very active, but in a different way. And I think that that would have been a cool way to build further the sort of two different worlds that they inhabit and how often they can intersect and why they're so compatible.
Yeah, because they really are, you know, a fish and a bird, so to speak, because besides the city and the country narrative and arguably the various racial narratives and mm-hmm. the familial narratives and the sense of self narratives, they each belong to a world where their job pulls them in a completely different mm-hmm. time of day. Hannah is up with the sun and getting ready for bed basically as food is starting to be fired in the kitchen. The mm-hmm. only time they really like cross over is when mise en place and pre-prep before you open a restaurant is, and you know, there is hours that people are in a kitchen before that first couple's ever sat at a table, because mm-hmm. it takes so long. You've got to do that stuff early. You can't let it go for a while. But then, you know, but this speaks to her Ray's writing. She's like, well, I have Mondays off. A lot of fine dining restaurants do go dark on Monday mm-hmm. and the occasional Tuesday. Also true. And also when you're the head chef in a restaurant that's opening, you don't get to pass it off onto the sous chefs, that you're not at that point yet.
Yeah. I also thought the fact that Drew and Hannah did make so much time for each other, and Hannah at one point even has a twinge of guilt for taking so many days off in the summer. That's so what we all do when we're new in a relationship and we're new and excited and horny and like having good sex for the first time in a while. Like, of course you sort of like leave work early to go see your person. Like, of course you offer to make them dinner if they come pick it up from your place of work. Like, it's just, well, it's human nature.
Yeah. And when Drew goes home, I like that those two just spent the night together too mm-hmm. the first time. It just wasn't a whole thing, because I don't think it really always is that intense of a conversation about, well, are you going to sleep? Are you going to go back to your place? It is, not to say it doesn't exist, but I think sometimes you just have a really good time and you're both tired, so you go to bed. Just let the endorphins do what they do. If consent is there and you're both attracted to each other, it doesn't have to be remorse immediately. Mm-hmm. And I feel a lot of times that like intimate moment gets kicked out when there's that conversation afterwards. When Drew goes home the next morning, she's like, well, I should, you know, shower and get ready. And she's like, well, I'm already kind of a sweaty mess. I guess I'll work on this yard I'm now responsible for. And then, you know, finishes showering up and gets to work. And now we know Drew's going to be exhausted because she's cooking until whenever we're shutting down there. She's going to be up for 15 hours, 16 hours. And
yeah,
it's just, yeah, I mean, yeah. Mm-hmm. The whole, like, not an invitation, hashtags in the text messages, and yeah. It's just all the double entendres that aren't and those that are. It's just really,
I loved when they're first, to take us back to their first date, I loved the scene of Hannah and Drew texting and Drew inviting Hannah on a picnic, and Hannah immediately screenshotting it and sending it to her friend and being like, is this a date? Like, tell me. And sort of that going between, like, having the conversation on the one hand and then on the other hand, like, talking about the conversation you're having with your friends. Like, who among us doesn't, you know, have that or do that? And it felt so...
I've been privy to yours, and I think you were privy to me texting her in the beginning. So yes. Yeah, and then she forgets to text back, so then there's a phone call.
Right?
It's because, so of course, like, you're that friend, too. If your friend sends you a screenshot, you give them so much time to continue whatever, and then uh-huh. you're like, okay, wait, spilled beans.
Yes.
And, of course, there's an AGA, y'all. Like, there's a wonderful, wonderful... we talked about a lot, but I don't think we talked about, like, some of the best parts, so...
I know, there's... As we've said, there's so much packed into this little book that please just go read it. Talk to us about it as you're doing so. But, like, this is really one to sit with and to savor it. And, ugh.
And honest to goodness, I can say, having read it twice now, it is, there's no anxiety with it. Like, you know, you're sitting down with a romance novel. But you're, it's just, yeah. I'm speechless. It's just feel good. Even when it's not, it's not, oh my God, are they going to die? Like, mm-hmm. or is something really atrocious about to happen? It's that level of life that most of us experience. And yeah. there's something comforting in that. So even when things do get a little bit dicier, feels like everything's a food metaphor this episode. When things get a little bit dicier, you're not holding your breath so hard that it hurts to turn the page. It was the absolute perfect book to read. Do you have any questions before I get to the next part?
I don't have any questions.
I don't. Not because there aren't there, just because I get to look at you and talk to you about this and the silent eye contact of the sighs and isn't that great? And things are very helpful. I appreciate you, Caitlin.
I appreciate you, Rebecca.
Aw, shucks.
Our southern accent's coming out here.
Oh, I swear. And we're not even drinking. Have you been in a place this week to read anything, enjoy music? You said you were playing your games at the beginning of this. What can you possibly share with the class, so to speak?
Yeah, so I've been consuming a few different things that could be called media. I am listening almost exclusively to the Hadestown soundtrack.
Is this your first go-around recently?
No, oh my God. Okay. I mean, no. But it's like helping me sleep.
Listen to
the Hadestown soundtrack, both the Broadway version and the original off-Broadway version. Mm-hmm. And if I wake up early and I get to hear Amber Gray, great. But other than that, I haven't been reading a lot of books. I've been struggling on that front. But I did read... So last episode, we did a whole foray through my history on Fiction Press, and I found a different straight romance story series that I really liked when I was in high school, and I reread it, and it is a vampire, werewolf, there are dragons, there are demons, there's really good sex. Which is why I liked it in high school. And I enjoyed that, but everyone was so helpful with helping me find more home improvement lesbian romance novels that I want to call upon everyone's good graces just one more time. I'm kind of feeling like a supernatural kind of romance novel. So if anyone has some suggestions, hit me up, please and thank you. What about you, Rebecca?
I have dived back into like old, I don't want to say old, they're not old, but I've dived back into late 90s, early 2000s quintessential queer women films. Mm. So, you know, Foxfire, and I recently revisited Debs because I just feel good when I finish watching it. Yeah. I've also read Margot Fox's book, Her Royal Bodyguard, this past week, and keeping with the food theme, I wrapped up on Georgia Beers's Flavor of the Month. One, because I did want to read it, and two,
read that.
Because somebody has very patiently been waiting for me to finish so she can talk with me about it, and I really want to continue this conversation with her. So I finally buckled down and was able to concentrate and do that. I'm like you too. I've been on a huge, huge musical theater kick. Possibly because my work in progress is a queer retelling of Music Man. We'll see how it goes. Heard it here first, Caitlin.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
So I'm trying to take that structure and manipulate it some. I understand it's not in the public domain. I'm just saying I'm inspired by it, but there's some really good tropes within Music Man, and I'm enjoying playing with that right now as I try to write. So, yeah.
That's
what's going on there. You know, capital P, which rhymes with T, or I'm sorry, capital T, which rhymes with P, which stands for, please don't ask me more about it. I'm about X number of words behind today.
Well, as always, if any of you want to chat with us, talk to us about something that we may have missed in this discussion, you want to fangirl with us about Aurora Ray, you can find us at A Tip of the Tongue on Instagram or ATTTpod on Twitter. Where can people find you, Rebecca?
On Instagram, I'm at Rebecca Writes a Romance. And I'm on Twitter at Rebecca ATTTpod.
So you can find me mostly on Instagram at Same Sex in the City or on Twitter at Same Sex the City.
I feel I can speak for both of us in this moment when I say it's really nice to talk to those of you who have included us in your life and who subscribed and the people who've left comments. That's crazy. People leave comments now on like iTunes and stuff. That's just, that's something new and weird and humbling. Yeah, I don't know. This started as a weird experiment for me and a journey for Caitlin. And there are so many more people who kindly let us take up some of their time. And yeah, I just, I could not have asked for a more wonderful, more nerdy, more inclusive, more uplifting and supporting group of familiar strangers than the gift the WLW and Lesfit community has provided to me. And I know I sound overly sentimental and sappy right now, but last week was really hard. Just, you know, everybody hits their wall at some point. And my wall was not as hard as it could have been hit because I just kind of got to escape most of it with you guys. And yeah, thank you. I don't know how to express it any other way, but thank you.
Well, I'm nowhere near as eloquent ever as Rebecca. So I'll just echo. Thank y'all, everyone. And yeah, thank you. We're humbled and just so thankful that we get to do this with all of you.
Oh, and Caitlin? Hmm. That includes you, and there's no hierarchy, but you're always the first text answered and the last call made. So thank you.
Thank you.